Chapter 14. Labyrinth. Zephon's bandoliers rattled as he walked, the bound arsenal of rad grenades clinking against his red ceramite. He felt like an imposter in his own skin. The Volkite pistols holstered on his thigh plates hadn't been fired in years, nor had he sparred with the power sword sheathed on his backpack. Similarly, he'd done nothing more than clean and maintain the bolter he now carried over one shoulder, hanging by its thick strap of bar-light mutant hide leather. After an airspeeder conveyance had carried him halfway across Himalaya to the palace's high-security core, he walked ever downwards through the beating heart of the Imperium, occasionally resorting to subterranean transit pods or the elevator platforms in constant operation. He had spoken to Diocletian and Arkan Land, the former telling him of the dark wonders of the impossible city and the foes faced by the 10,000, the latter waxing loud and long about the structure of the webway and its potential for mankind. He had reviewed the Archimandrite's implanted map, and yet doubts lingered. Or perhaps it was hope that lingered. Zephon wished feverishly for such enlightenment to be lies. The Blood Angel had no idea what to believe. He knew only that the 10,000 had chosen him to serve the Emperor, and he would do so to his dying breath. And so he journeyed to join them. Through districts that had evolved into librarium archives, through museum sectors given over to the teeming refugee masses, through storage chambers and arsenals and even old Terran foundries, the Blood Angel walked in solemn silence, his gait exaggerated slightly by the bulky twin turbines of his jump pack. The double engines rose above his pauldrons, wings in intent, if not in form. Servo skulls drifted endlessly past, pausing to aim their sensoria cluster eye needles at him, scanning him for unified biometric identification. Inevitably, they would give a satisfied click and drift away. Towards the end of the first day, he passed the first seal. The ever-locked Iris Gate wasn't locked for him. He entered without hesitation, passing a phalanx of 100 Imperial fists on one side of the gate, then 5 custodians on the other. The former greeted him with grim formality. The latter ignored him completely. His descending path converged with those of his fellow pilgrims. A stream of tracked battle servitors rumbled along the hallways in their hundreds, en route to the Imperial dungeon for whatever purpose the custodians had in mind. Not long after Zephon joined this lobo-chipped convoy, they were joined by the tall and striding forms of House Viridian. The great knights shook the stone chambers and corridors with their thunderous march, and Zephon felt his bleak heart stir at the sight of Jaya and her war court. Gone was the gunmetal grey and bare steel of the unpainted dregs machines donated and begged from other houses. Zephon might have expected the blue-green of their former heraldry, but this too was absent. Viridian's armour plates had turned black and gold, and while they lacked the banners of their past deeds, they once more showed a sigil on their tilting shields, the Imperial Aquila, symbolizing the unity of Terra and Mars, the simplest, purest symbol they could have chosen. Looking at the monstrous form of Baroness Jaya as she strode over and ahead of him, Zephon kindled a shared voxlink. "Viridian marches," he said with a faint smile. "Viridian marches," came the crackling reply. The lead knight turned, a great bronze aquila hanging on chains from its bolt cannon swaying with the motion, and sounded its alarm horn through the stone hallways. It was answered by the horns and klaxons of every other knight in the procession, as House Viridian celebrated its march. By the second day's dawn, the travellers were far from the sun's light. Zephon's trudging tread was marked by the clank of pistons and the thunder of heavy metal feet in silent corridors. Billions lived and toiled within the walls of the palace, but the procession saw none of them, as though this was not the heart of the Imperium after all, merely an empty realm, a kingdom of stone and shadow. On they walked, Every few hours they would pass one of the seals, the irises of each gateway open and waiting, unpatrolled, unguarded, unbarred. They passed the Hybron Arch, vaulted above the fires of torches that had burned through old night and burned still. They walked the processional of the Eternals, beneath the painted eyes of vanquished warlords. They walked until they had sunk into the underworld of the palace's foundations, gouged into the living rock of the planet's Himalayan spine. And still they descended. Servitor workers began to appear at infrequent intervals, along with robed adepts tending to machines and engines squatting in the basalt rock. The earthen corridors remained tall and wide. The knights never once had to hunch or double back to seek another way, and the ground showed the erosion of countless feet and vehicle tracks. Despite an eidetic recollection, Zephon wasn't certain of the exact moment he realized the convoy was no longer being presented with alternate routes. After the fifth seal? At the sixth? When had the many tributary corridors converged at last into this one final path? His instinctive sense of direction slowly began to tell another truth. The twists and turns betrayed his route, not always downwards, but never ascending, remaining deep within the planet's crust. He was walking a labyrinth, not one akin to the eclectic garden mazes of the wealthy or the prisons of the mythologically monstrous, but a true labyrinth out of ancient Terran lore, of the kind once seen in holy temples and places of pilgrimage. He knew them from his studies into pre-imperial spirituality, when they had been embossed onto cathedral floors or etched upon the earth, forming a path for pilgrims to walk every step until reaching the centre. They were meant to be journeys of understanding, from ignorance to enlightenment. Was this such a journey? I hear thunder. Almost as soon as the thought came, he realized its untruth. Not thunder at all, no matter how similar in sound. The false thunder grew louder with the passing of time, turn by turn, tunnel by tunnel. Zephon saw faint markings along the walls and brushed aside the dust as delicately as he could with a sweep of one bionic hand. Simple, primal pictures met his curious touch, resembling the cave paintings exhibited by the most primitive human cultures. He walked on, stopping at random to study the primeval artwork, hunting scenes of simple figures bearing spears against great beasts, a community of shadowy humans gathered around the red-orange curls of a fire, dozens of figures with arms raised in worship to the high sphere of the sun. It wasn't long before the travellers reached the bridge, and with it, the thunder. The path before them spanned an abyss. The servitors stalked and rolled onwards. The knights hesitated, reining their war suits to a halt. Zephon stopped with them, sliding from the conveyor upon which he'd been riding, looking with unbelieving eyes at the source of the thunder pouring down into the infinite black. The water of terror, harvested for the palace's underground reservoirs, plunged in vast, roaring falls from the cavern's roof high above. Zephon found himself first smiling, then laughing at the breathtaking sight. Such was its scale and the deafening pressure of its crashing bellow. He had fought on oceanic worlds, on monsoon worlds, but the effect was no less majestic to him. He was a child of Baal, and few planets could claim such a radiation-soaked, thirsty legacy as that distant globe. Yet on they walked, steps becoming meters, meters becoming kilometers. Eventually the thunder receded. Zephon's focus drifted with uneasy wonder as he ventured through the labyrinth, beneath the vast stone statues of humanity's first false gods, over bridge-spanned chasms that cradled the bones of long-dead settlements. As he traversed another wide stone arch bridge, he saw the cold, sunless remains of an entire city. Even from his maddening altitude above the grave city, he sensed movement inside the black eyes of glassless windows, the ghosts of a distant past, staring up in hollow and sullen silence at the passing of their descendants and inheritors. What was this place when it stood in the sun? He wasn't certain whether he thought the words or whispered them aloud, until he received an answer.
Kathmandu,
a voice murmured across the vox. Zephon didn't tear his eyes from the dead city 500 meters below. Impossibly, there was wind here, a soft breeze that tasted of dust.
Diocletian, he voxed back. You asked what this place once was. It was the city of Kathmandu, capital of the nation Sagarmatha, also called Nepal. It was once the roof of the world.
That is very poetic. And now it lies dead, part of the palace's foundations remaining only in name in the precincts above.
Thank you, Diocletian.
The custodian, far ahead at the front of the column, didn't respond again. The next bridge was reinforced by support stanchions and black iron gantries, binding the stone pathway to the cavern's far-off walls. The air itself gleamed orange from the underworld's light. Heat assailed Zephon in a rising miasma. Molten rock seethed and sludged in the abyss below. The bridge spanned a wound in Terra's crust, seemingly torn open to the planet's mantle. A great lake of the world's liquid bloodfire burned in the darkness far, far below, somehow only breeding more shadows instead of banishing them. More and more images showed upon the chamber walls as the procession made its way through the labyrinth. Cave paintings of ochre and charcoal became artful mosaics and impressionist vistas. Images of suns, of the heavens, of the blue Terran sky and the black void beyond. Pictographs of satellites, those earliest machines that sung their songs into the silent night. Then came the artistry of the Dark Age, of old night, and the unification wars that ravaged Terra. Wars of unrivaled savagery, racked cities that couldn't possibly exist. Men of flesh fought men of stone and men of steel. Zephon swallowed at the sight of Baal among the painted heavens, far too high on a ceiling mural for him to touch. He held his knuckles to his heart in solemn salute and walked on, passing yet more scenes of devastation on a scale never again to be matched, followed in turn by scenes showing the salvation of a species brought together after old night by the guiding golden hand of the species' master. Then came the monsters. Devilish forms, conjured from human nightmare, waged war in realms of fire and ice and smoke and flood. Horned beasts, red-fleshed and armoured in brass, carrion-eating skeletal dancers with the faces and features of ancient birds. Zephon saw creatures from his own childhood dreams, monsters conjured by his own youthful, slumbering imagination. How can they be here? No answer presented itself. Soon enough, Zephon noted another change, a shift in the surroundings. Machines, engines, became far more numerous, set into the ground or half-projecting out from unfinished murals and incomplete mosaics. The crash and bang of industry's metallic song grew louder and louder with each twist and turn. Where the artistry of ages had marked the walls, soon space was given over to the primacy of cables and pipes to feed the machines, seemingly pushed into place and bolted to the palace's stone foundations out of rushed necessity. Some of the engines spun chemicals the way a centrifuge spins blood. Others juddered as they sucked power or generated it, or acted as junctions to spit it elsewhere. Towers of crates lined the walls of each chamber, eclipsing the incomplete architecture. Workers, robed or coated or suited, were everywhere. Zephon removed his helmet to wipe silent tears from his eyes. The agony of the journey, of this entire labyrinth, burned at his core in place of the doubts he'd previously held. This journey would have been the first step of humanity's life without the warp. This was the route to the webway. Mankind should have walked through this labyrinth
as a journey of understanding, bathing in the symbolism, preparing to step into the stars anew. A species reborn, saved from damnation by one man's vision.
Yet it stood darkened and unfinished. So much stone yet undressed. The passageways that were supposed to lead to enlightenment, now blighted and defaced by archaeotech machines bolted into place in the wake of Magnus's folly. War had touched this place of last hope. Suddenly it was all too easy to see this place defiled in the months to come, suffering at the rabid, iconoclastic hands of Horus's rebels when they reached Terra. Would they care for the promise of this unfinished labyrinth, or would they desecrate it with the wrath of the ignorant?
Zephon's smile was a weak, dark little thing. Mere days before, he'd not been sure what to believe. Now he mourned the incompleteness of the Emperor's vision of salvation. He had walked the labyrinth and learned all he needed to know. He closed his pale eyes.
"Why do you weep, Blood Angel?"
Zephon turned to see Jaya's sacristan apex. He'd believed only servitors were nearby in this section of the processional. Torolek, that was the priest artisan's name. Zephon had only met the man once before, on the battlements, weeks ago.
"Loss," he said, and added nothing more.
"Are we close?"
Baroness Jaya voxed across the general channel.
"Close to what?"
Diocletian's reply was blithe.
"To the Imperial dungeon. To the Emperor's laboratory."
The custodian's reply was immediate.
"They are the same thing," he said. "We have been in the Imperial dungeon since passing the final seal. This is the Emperor's laboratory. All of it."
Zephon replaced his helm, sealing his collar lock with a snap hiss of air pressure. He breathed the recycled air of his battle plate and walked on. Less than an hour later, they reached the Eternity Gate. The procession stopped at the heart of the labyrinth. Zephon stood in the final promenade, surrounded by a multitude of banners standing in honoured rows. A cavalcade of colours stretched out on both sides of the downward-stared marble avenue, each woven standard showing the names, numbers, sigils, worlds, or proud, avataric beasts that embodied one of the Imperium's regiments. Every regiment that had ever worn the Imperial Eagle and fought under the Emperor's aegis was represented by a flag, banner, trophy, or pennant. A field of markers stretching in their tens of thousands, all leading ever downwards toward the door of the Emperor's throne room. The great doors of the gate stood open at the end of the descending avenue, their 200-metre height reaching up to the cavern's arched roof. Moisture wept from the sedimentary rock sky, painting a thousand shining trickle rivers down the surface of the metal doors. An image of the Emperor was bisected by their parting, a great embossed mural of the Master of Mankind wielding a spear against the draconic beasts and machine horrors of old night. And between those wide doors, only darkness. For the first time in several hours, no machinery was bolted to the walls and floor, and no workstations or storage crates obscured the beauty of what lay before him. Yet Zephon sensed the subsonic thrum of power cables beneath his boots, as energy cobwebbed throughout the labyrinth. Ostentation may have eclipsed pragmatism here at the Eternity Gate, but it hadn't replaced it. Shadows and spectres stood at the edges of Zephon's sight, overlaying the truth of his senses with stories not yet told. Each time he shifted his gaze, he witnessed some other echoing ghost, some other suggestion of what might yet be. The great doors were unguarded, yet there stood two towering Reaver Titans either side of the arch, their armour plating cast in the aggressive blazonry of Mars's own Legio Ignatum. The ocean of banners stood in windless silence, yet there walked a host of hunchbacked priests dressed in the flayed skin of their forefathers,
swinging incense braziers and chanting prayers to the souls of those men and women who fought beneath the icons across the galaxy. The air above the avenue was empty, yet there circled the ungainly anti-gravitic forms of cherub-like drones, seemingly cloned child angels wheeling through the air. They trailed banners from their ankles and rang handheld bells, tolling who knew what. The doors were wide open, yet they stood closed in their ethereal echo, and the rendition of the Emperor showed him surrounded by a wheeling cosmos of demons and mythological beasts. He was haloed by the sun, triumphant above the impaled body of something horned and serpentine. Each Baroque ghost glimpse told a tale from a time when the Imperial dungeon seemed more of a cathedral than a laboratory, a time when the Emperor himself was worshipped rather than revered. And there, last of all, out of tune with the other echoes, an angel stood before the gate, armoured in bleeding gold, bearing a sword of silver fire, its great white wings spread wide in defiance, the swan feathers ragged and bloody red. "Father," said Zephon through numb lips. But the angel was gone, and the words were fading behind him as he stepped forwards. The gate yawned wide before him. Alongside rumbling, tank-treaded servitors, unable to acknowledge their surroundings beyond track-kill subroutines, Zephon entered the Emperor's throne room. The darkness was a falsehood, one that cleared as soon as he passed through it. The first thing to hit Zephon's senses was a retinal smear of migraine light, bright enough that even his oculobe implant was useless in defending his eyes against it. He narrowed his gaze to a slit, one hand raised against the fierce illumination. The second thing to strike was the burning machine stink of overworked metal. He'd fought in manufactories on several worlds, breathing in the charcoal and scorched iron reek of machinery slowly dying, wearing out its moving parts. He knew that same smell at once, even spiced as it was by the acidic tang of charged ozone. The third element was the sound, the shouting voices, the lightning lash of sparking machines, the primeval hum of running engines. He felt it as much as heard it. He felt it in his blood, in his bones. "Keep walking," Diocletian's voice. He kept walking, seeing little, sensing everything. Ahead of him, someone shrieked. "Keep walking," shouted Diocletian across the vox. Pivoting to find who had called out, Zephon saw only the faintest silhouettes. Maddening. Insane. His genetic modifications were born of the Emperor's own genius. A space marine saw in near darkness and overcame blinding light with equal ease, yet he could see almost nothing. Another cry, this time from his side. An unknowable distance away, there was a crash of falling metal beams, or perhaps a collapsing gantry. He saw none of it. "Am I blind?" "I cannot see," he said aloud. "You don't need to," replied Diocletian. "Move forwards. Keep walking." His eyes did adjust, though far slower than he'd ever known. Zephon saw the pale stone floor beneath his boots and the dark bronze of immense humming machines at the edges of his vision. Pain knifed awkward cuts at his eye sockets as he raised his head to see what lay before the marching procession. An archway, a door, a portal, a construct of light-stained marble that disgorged golden mist into the chamber. He couldn't make out its exact shape, circular, oval, nor its exact boundaries, where the alien mist ended and the structure's sides began.
"Don't look back," came Diocletian's voice once more.
Row after row of battle servitors rumbled into the golden fog, mind dead to all but their orders. A Cryos tank was swallowed a moment later, its passage doing nothing to disturb the mist. One of Jaya's knights strode in alongside another servitor host, enveloped by the portal's exhalations. Another of them stood inactive by the portal's edge, grasped by tendrils of golden fog, half turned away to look back over the rest of the marching column. Zephon could hear the Baroness shouting at the courtier, demanding he keep moving. The pilot's voice came back, stammering, shattered.
The Emperor! My Emperor! The Omnissiah!
Don't look back, Diocletian snapped. Baroness, lead your scions through, now!
Jaya's towering form lurched in a heavy stride, shaking the ground as she clanked forwards. The remaining knights followed in a ragged march, moving between and stepping over the servitor horde. When Zephon reached the portal's cusp, the curling wisps of mist formed breathy tendrils against his armor plating. It carried no scent, no taste, no presence beyond what he could see. Above him swayed the idle form of the awestruck knight. Either side of him, Thalaxai cyborgs marched into the mist. Their blood-filled face domes reflected the golden fog. Zephon turned and ceased. What would he see if he looked back? The light's intensity as a sun's flare, ringing a structure raised above the ground. A core of blackness in the heart of a thunderstorm's flickering light. A throne with a corona of energy and a figure upon it. A figure that don't look back! Diocletian was there, shoving the Blood Angel with the haft of his spear.
But the Emperor,
the very throne of terror,
move, bringer of sorrow. Move now.
Zephon swallowed, faced the golden mist head on, and took his first step into the webway.